After 15 years serving as a missionary in Kenya, Dan returned to the U.S. to lead Bethany Gateways for 8 years, overseeing more than 100 Bethany missionaries fielded around the world, focusing on their field effectiveness, leadership development, and recruitment. Dan has recently taken on a new role overseeing leadership development and discipleship across Bethany's fields. Dan and his wife, Nancy, were classmates at Bethany Global University, and they have 3 children. So welcome for me, Dan. Hey, Dan. Good to have you here. Have a seat.
If I didn't know that was practice, I could have gone to
my head. Could go to your head. There you go. All right. Well, Dan, I just want to let people kind of get to know how you're connected to this. So what are some of the ways that you're engaging with people that are getting engaged? What's your point of connection?
Before we do that, can we do first things first?
Okay.
First selfie?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's not every day you get to be on this kind of thing.
Right. I got to remember this.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. I'll send you a copy.
Awesome.
So, what was the question again?
So, what's your kind of point of contact in getting people engaged with the Great Commission?
Well, over the years, it's varied from time to time. In Kenya, that was a big part of my role.
Yep.
Was engaging the Kenyan church across denominations to be reaching the unreached people groups within their country. There were 22 groups, 25 actually, and beyond. And we spent 15 years there, mobilizing and training the Kenyan church towards that end. Here, coming back in the years I served as international director, it was mostly in terms of recruitment, particularly out of our own Bethany Global University, but also through other means as well. That would be the probably the main areas in which I have done that.
All right. So, Bethany today, university, you got folks coming to you. They're interested in missions. Probably that's why they're coming. I mean, what does it look like today at Bethany compared to when you were a student there?
Well, in fact, that's interesting is today the student body and the student body when we were there, the thing they had in common is that they've come because they want to be trained to be missionaries.
Yep.
Or are very open to that call in their life. And so you have, in a sense, you have a group of people that are going, this is what we're wanting to do, this is what we're feeling called to do. So you're not looking for the needle in the haystack.
Yep.
You've kind of got the whole haystack there and trying to send it. But now it comes down to how do they feel they can connect? How
yep.
do they feel, what are you saying that's connecting to them that's going to give them an opportunity to really know how to move ahead and engage their call?
Okay, so what are some of the things that you say to them that really push their buttons today?
I think it really comes down to ultimately it's truth. It's information. Jolene this morning talked about information.
Yep.
And but how we engage information now is probably different than how we engage information, as Jolene talked about. But information is very powerful.
Yep.
To understand, okay, where are the actual needs, so that we're basing they can be we're sending in terms of what's actually real. I mean, we saw Nehemiah. It was information that caused him into action.
Okay.
That caused him to pray, got convicted, and then actually went and did something about it. And I think the principle is still the same, how we share that information. And honestly, with all the generational change and information, we're still playing catch up, honestly, and how best to do that.
Okay.
In order to, even with a captive audience, how do you do that in the way that actually feels right for them?
Okay. So we got an audience here that a lot represent churches as where there is the kind of the mode and the place they're serving. And I know you're quite passionate about the church being engaged in mobilizing people. So why is that so exciting to you?
Yeah, my view is that mission belongs in the church.
Yeah, amen.
And that the church should be involved in every step of the process of mission. And even in Kenya, as we had the opportunity to be involved in a Kenyan mission movement that was just emerging interdenominationally when they had just become aware across the church of their unreached people groups, I was able to, Lord opened the door for us to be there in the midst of that. And when we set up missions training, we actually set it up where it was the church that applied to send the student. Mm-hmm. It was the pastor that came for the interview with the candidate. But the church was involved in the process every step. We can't quite do that here. We have 200 years of precedent of how missions is done, But even Steve Eliason, who's sitting in the third row there with us, part of his role is church engagement, of how do we build relationship and partnership with the church. Because I believe the church is engaged, and kids are hearing about mission from the time they're children all the way through. It becomes a normal thing, uh-huh. not an oddity at the time they get to college and uh-huh. Choose a life direction.
Cool. So it sounds like you're hinting at, like, there's a lot of information out there in this world, and so if we can, like, kind of narrow it down to some information that really makes sense to them and get that to them, that's what seems to be really motivating.
Yeah, I think that, and I think, and it's the trusting that the Spirit of God is working in them.
Uh-huh.
You know, our generation doesn't have the, the corner market on that. The Spirit is alive and well in the generation today, and I think we we can see that what's happening in Asbury right now, that God is going to work, and we have to trust for the Spirit to draw people's hearts.
So you have people in all different kinds of ages coming into Bethany as new missionaries, is that?
We do. In fact, we have an orientation coming up, I think, in 2 weeks. I'm looking at our personnel director there trying to get, 2 weeks. And we've got in there, we've got somebody who's graduating in May, so he's actually still a senior, and we have people that are in their 50s that are coming in. And so we're getting them at all ages that are coming in saying we want to be involved.
Do you think there's some difference of what gets them there, the ones in their 40s and 50s versus the ones that are 23?
Yeah, I think there probably is, and I think the ones in their 40s, 50s are, you know, they've had a life experience, they've got these skill sets, they've got these things, and they're wanting to be sure they're investing their life towards significance.
Uh-huh.
Not that what they're not doing here hasn't been significant, but how do I take what I've learned and be able to apply that into to another.
They got like a foundation built in their life, and they want to put something on that foundation, and that's that motivates.
And there's different challenges in sending
a
45, 50-year-old, and then there is a 23-year-old.
Sure.
There's challenges on both, and there, but it is different.
Okay. All right. Well, before we bring on our next guest, we have a little video clip that is meant to be challenging, motivational. So let's take a look at this and see what we think of it. Thoughts on that, Dan? From Pioneers.
Okay. Very well done. It's simulated, gives you a visual, doesn't give, like, okay, what does that mean? How do I do that? But, of course, I think that's going to get somebody interested to go, okay, well, what does that mean? Yeah. I think that's well done, yeah.
Yeah. I love the message there of, like, do you have what it takes? Do you doubt it? Well, trust God that it does.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's pretty, pretty cool.
Exactly.
So. All right, well, let me invite up our next guest.
Excellent.
All right, so let me get the info here. I've invited to join us Kaylin, who is Dan's daughter. And so let me tell you about Kaylin. Kaylin was born in Kenya and lived there until she was 14. At that point, the family moved back to the U.S. and moved to the inner city in South Minneapolis. Halen attended high school at Hope Academy. She was one of two white girls in her class. She is now a senior at Bethel and her last semester of nursing school and will graduate in May. She did note that she is not exactly the average American girl since she grew up as an MK in Africa and lived in the inner city. She is happy to speak from her perspective. All right, so welcome, Halen. Glad to have you. Have a seat. Awesome. All right, so you're a student at Bethel.
Yes, yep, I am studying nursing there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So tell me, are you like personally like excited and engaged with the Great Commission? You yourself?
Yeah, my goal is to do ministry and nursing somehow. I'm not quite sure what that will look like in a more like realistic way, but I do definitely want to use nursing in ministry either here in the States or overseas.
Yeah, so what caused that to be true about you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Kenya with my parents who were missionaries there, and I think just getting to see the needs that there were for the gospel overseas, and even just living in the city and seeing the needs that need for Jesus there as well, just kind of spurred my heart towards that direction.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So now Kaylin, she's like this really like eager person, because I heard this story from her dad when I was meeting with him a few weeks ago. And he's like, my daughter, one of them, always, whenever we were going to a church for a missionary presentation, she always says, Dad, can I say something? Dad, can I say something? And then she saw the MC Squared conference card on the refrigerator when she was visiting her parents and said, Dad, you're going to be at a conference? Can I go? And so here she is. So all right. So what'd you think of that video?
Yeah, it was, I think it's always good anytime you can get to see a different culture and get to see a different part of the world. So I think it was just a good.
So you think that's like, is that part of the piquing the people's interest for your, you know, classmates, people that you're at school with? Is that up on their radar of something different, something Wi-Fi rate, you know, some jungles have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So interesting. That's the name of the video, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think especially at Bethel, it's very much a suburban school, and I feel like people who go to Bethel have like not everyone, but I feel like there's not as much of like a big worldview about what's outside of Minnesota or the Midwest. So I think seeing something like that is kind of eye-opening.
Okay.
Captures
their attention.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, generally, would you say it's a really hard thing to capture people's attention for the Great Commission among your classmates again, or is it doable, or is it hopeless, or what?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Bethel has a very career-oriented culture, so people who go to Bethel have an idea of what they want to do, four-year plan, and then a plan afterwards, and I think because of that, the idea of doing like global missions or ministry is not like the front of people's minds always. Okay. I definitely have talked to students who have a heart for missions and who do want to go overseas or use what they're learning in their four-year degree for missions. So I think it just depends on the person or the circles people are in.
Yeah. So it sounds like if someone could view like engaging with the Great Commission as like a detour from what they're supposed to be doing in their life, or they could see it as, this is the way, I'm supposed to be a nurse, and this is the way that I can be a nurse in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
That's a better
message. I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Are there some hindrances for folks to want to engage?
I was talking to my dad about this earlier. I have a couple friends who are studying missional ministry at Bethel and who have been discouraged by parents or people around them.
Yeah.
Like, what you're studying, you're not going to be able to practically do when you graduate. Like, it's not going to be financially stable. It's not a way to, like, support a family. So I think that is one hindrance of just the appearance of just financial instability that people view missions as. I've seen that kind of be a hindrance towards people kind of
I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking that was the biggest hindrance, and I didn't coach her to say it, but no. That's like, I honestly, I mean, my Julie and I engage with new missionaries all the time with training, and you know, half of them, that's part of their stories. They had to overcome that hindrance of their families wanting to hold them back. And so probably part of our reality of challenging today, it would be maybe we need to be challenging the whole family in some way, not hiving off the one person. And the whole family has to buy into, we're sending our best to go be part of this. It's probably a part of it.
And that's why I think having the church where mission is coming from and where the mobilization is starting just throughout the whole church and where it's coming, you're engaging the whole family at that point.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes that's a significant avenue for that.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're even growing in our world of how we think about evangelism. It's like you don't just pull the person over to the side and work on that one person and then hope that somehow they're going to go back into their community. It's somehow it's got to be more like we evangelize to the community, right? Okay. Well, cool. Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a little, you guys hold on. I'm going to do a little side thing here of share some of my thoughts from the Bible that I've been sharing. And the one that I grabbed on for this session, and it didn't turn out to be like kind of what I thought it was going to be either, in that it was the story of the little girl in 2 Kings chapter 5 that was a slave or a servant girl in this house of Naaman. So I don't know if you remember, it's the time of Elisha, and there's the people of Israel had been conquered, and this girl was carried off to Aram. Aram is the kingdom, and she's serving in this house. A young girl, it doesn't say her name, doesn't say how old she was, just says a young girl, and she was serving actually Naaman's wife. And Naaman had leprosy. He's this great warrior. He's probably a really mean guy, you know, a serious warrior guy. And she just feels for him, and she says, hey, if he went to Israel, the prophet there could probably heal him from his leprosy. And I grew up with this story of this little girl that was a witness for God. And it was, like, so cool. She's a witness for God. But when I reread it and thought about it today, I was like, this little girl is a slave. And she could be locked into her identity and say, I'm a slave and I hate these stinking people and I ain't going to do nothing good for them. And she doesn't. She doesn't lock into that identity of herself. She locks into that I'm a person that could be a blessing to another person and I could be a witness or a prophet to this person for their blessing. And she does that. And she, and it's interesting, it's a long story, and it didn't need to necessarily mention her, but it does mention her in this story. I mean, she's a key, like, linchpin to this story happening. And the end of the story, you know, Naaman, he goes with, like, $1.2 million worth of stuff to take to give as a gift to the prophet or to the king to get this healing. So it was like, it's a massive deal to want to be healed from this leprosy. It's a big deal. And she plays this part in it happening, and it's because she doesn't see herself lock her identity into that. And as I'm thinking about Jesus, there's another event in his life, and it's really simple. Let me read you this event. In Luke chapter 8, it says, now Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, and they were not able to get near him because of the crowd. Someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside waiting to see you. And Jesus replied, my mother and brothers are those who hear God's word and put it into practice. And so, you know, Jesus does not lay aside his relationship with his family. He doesn't deny his family and walk away from them. None of that happens because we know later on Jesus' brothers are like key players in the church, in the early eras of the church. So he still has this relationship with his brother. His mother's at the foot of the cross. So he didn't walk away from his relationship with his family. And yet Jesus, at this moment, we see that he is like seeing his identity as something that's beyond what the core identity that people would tend to see themselves in those days. They would see themselves as, I am part of my family, and that is my key. And yet he's saying, you know what? This family stuff is nothing compared to this stuff. You know, and just what you just said. I mean, can we today, in today's world of the United States, can we break out of my key identity is I'm near my family. I'm going to have kids. They're going to live in the suburbs. They're going to have this idyllic life that we imagine to have. Or can we break out into a deeper, bigger identity of I'm on mission with God. In whatever part of that mission God wants me to play, I don't know, but my identity is that. And I think that's, I mean, this little girl, she could have been locked into. I've been human trafficked, you know, and that's who I am. And, you know, forget everybody, but she didn't. She stayed, I'm a child of Israel, a child of God that could be a blessing to others, blessed to be a blessing. So I just hope that we can challenge people towards that and that we can, you know, if God's asking us to even reevaluate our identity and say, I can lock my identity into something even bigger than some of my foundational identities. There's some things even bigger. And am I willing to go there? Am I willing to let my kids go there? Am I willing to let people from my church go there? River Valley Church, you know, Jesse's going to be our next guest coming up. We're losing some of our best people to missions, but the church is willing to do it because we're willing to have that be our identity. That's pretty amazing. So let me invite up then our next guest then, Jesse Johansson. So come on up, Jesse. All right, glad to have you. Have a seat. All right, Jesse has served at River Valley Church since 2014. His role is a global project associate pastor. He looks after day-to-day missions efforts at River Valley Church, including mobilization, partnership, and short-term teams. He originally hails from Iowa, but his wife and Renee have three children. Their family calling is to equip the local church to engage in and support missions with their whole heart. So glad to have you, Jesse.
Thank you. Thanks All for right. such a warm welcome, everybody.
All right, so what's Global Project? That was in your bio there.
Yeah, so at River Valley Church, our missions department, missions effort, we call Global Project. People often say global projects. If they're not sure, it's not about projects around the world. The global project is referring to the Great Commission to reach the world. And so that's why we call it Global Project. And it's a great conversation piece. It helps. It's a way to introduce the Great Commission and to help teach the body about it.
Okay. So do you think that there's like any less interest today in the Great Commission or missions than there was, let's say, 30 years ago?
Man, it's a great question. I'm part of the universally beloved millennial generation, and so I can't speak like to 30 years ago. I don't know as much trajectory, but certainly engagement is low in the Great Commission. I would say in the church. I know there's lots of different studies, and I know Jolene has some of this insight too. But I was reading in The Great Disconnect, if you've heard this, Barna did one of their research from 2022 on missions engagement in the local church.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, the recent stat of it, 26% of these are of church-going Christians have a good grasp of what the Great Commission is.
Okay.
So of people that are going to church regularly, about a quarter have a grasp of what the Great Commission is. And the same number, about 1 in 4, have a grasp, or not just a grasp, but think of missions as something for the whole church instead of just something for select people. So I don't know what the trajectory is, but certainly it can feel like pushing a rock up a hill.
Uh-huh.
And one thing is we've been blessed to be a part of a church where we are imperfect, but we do emphasize missions, and that's something that I've always loved, always appreciated, and it's something that's, I mean, we've benefited this in our own life and in our family to see that kind of come to fruit in a new way. So,
yep. So it possibly, you know, that was kind of like measuring like an end statistic, you know, where are people
right.
at? It could be their hearts, but it also could be how and why the church
right.
is working with them, right, to
right.
understand.
Yeah.
So we'd have to probably check that out. Where's the disconnect?
And I think about there's a difference too between uninterested
yeah.
And unaware.
Right.
And I find that a lot of times it lives in the camp of a lack of awareness. It
yeah.
comes not from it's indifference because there isn't awareness, not just because, yeah, mm-hmm. I think I understand it. And it's like, you know, God bless those people who maybe care about that.
So, Dan, you seem pretty adamantly agreeing. You want to hand the mic?
There's a progression from understanding, which with understanding can come commitment. And then with commitment can come engagement. But you're not going to go to engagement absent of commitment, which is not going to happen absent of understanding.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's that issue of understanding, but how do we bring that now in this day and age?
So if the potential's there, because it's not that they're disinterested, it's just that they're uninformed. We could be disserving them if we're making the assumption, oh, well, they're not going to want to hear this, and so we don't inform, and then they're not going to progress. We would be not serving them.
Totally.
So how are some ways that, like, River Valley's, like, targeting it specifically? How do we talk about it, or how does River Valley talk about it to people in their 40s and 50s? How do we talk about it to people that are young families or youth?
Yeah, I think that it's a great question, and I think it's something we're always grappling with, you know, as so serving on the local church side of this and not having been on the field, but trying to resource and send people to the field. I would say it's something we're always trying to refine, to bring new ideas about or trying new things. One thing, so we, and honestly, we have a blessing that it's built into the culture of our church that missions is important, it is valuable. But it's like you there's no shortage of ways you can try to tie it into things or talk about it. So like some of them, and they're not always age specific, but like some of them I think about, you mentioned maybe people 50s, 40s, 50s. I think we want to see everyone go on what we call global teams. That's what our short-term trips are called. So we call them global teams. And we even say within 3 years of being at River Valley, go on a global team. Once this is your home church, we think within 3 years you should go. And to take it out of the realm of this is just for young people, I think helps to see that this isn't just for those who are college students that should go. This is for everybody to go. So going on a global team, I like to think of it as we talk about help people give and live for something bigger than themselves.
Okay.
I think so. Something we established as a church since the beginning is we set aside 10% of the tithe, and that goes towards global missions. So that's how we support missionaries. That's how different projects and initiatives and things that we're able to help with. And so when people are tithing, they're supporting missions, and you can communicate that. And it's a lot easier to show it after the fact than let me help you see why you should give towards this. Is like, hey, this is what we get to do as a church. You're a part of it. You're already a part of it. And so, but people get to see it when they live. So that's a giving side. But a living side is God. Jesus desires our unqualified yes. We talk about our yes a lot, and this is something in our church we share, but Jesus deserves, and I think asks for our unqualified yes. So when we say yes to him for salvation, when we say yes to him for blessings, when we say yes to him for who he is and relationship that he's offering, it requires something on our end too. We just don't know what it is yet. When we say yes, there will be things he asks of us, but we have to be ready to do those things because we've already said yes. So that's going to be different ages. And I can talk through different ages. I don't want to overshare or anything. But I find that goes through different ages, different seasons. That's going to be something that we try to be that's consistent, where I think the youngest kid should understand this and the oldest person should understand that Jesus requires your life. This is what he's asking for, whatever it might be.
So it sounds like setting the culture in the church is like tilling the ground that they're ready to hear that challenge. And then the challenge comes along to actually do the thing they've been
totally
wanting to do. I actually was talking with a pastor a few weeks ago saying, I think there's a lot, like talking specifically of reaching out in the community. He said, there's a lot of people that have the desire to do it. They just need someone to come along and give them a pathway for it. And then they'll jump onto that pathway. And I was like, I think I really agree with you on that. That's powerful when you can provide that pathway. So, okay, I want to ask, we just sang a song, Send Me, that's a River Valley original song, and it's pretty straightforward of saying, like, you know, I lay my life on the altar, I'm going to trust you, God, it all belongs to you, send me wherever, I don't care, I trust you, Lord. That's pretty, like, direct, and, you know, sometimes churches today are kind of holding back and being like, well, we don't want to push people too much, they might leave, or they might, I mean, is it like, is that the rhetoric, and does that work, or is that scaring people away?
That's a great that's a great thing. I will say the short of it is, I think we need boldness. Like, we need boldness and directness. And I think when we have a lot of conversations in our church, and we welcome them, that's, okay, if we're going to be about missions or we're going to be out sending missionaries, that's the keystone, we call it the bullseye of our church, long-term vision of our church is to send missionaries out from our body. So we have a lot of people ask, well, what does that mean for my neighbor? What does that mean for me? What does that mean for the community next to me? And so we welcome those types of conversations because at the end of the day, it's going to be a both and. It's going to be a, we need to make disciples everywhere. And that includes the ends of the earth. It also includes our neighborhood. It includes all of it. And so we welcome those conversations, but you find that, I look here, all of us are, we came on Saturday. There's a lot of things we could be doing. We're at this conference. We're here because we care about this. We care about it. And I think I want other people to care about it too. And so because of that, it's why not have things that start the conversation? Why not be bold? Why not be even a little brazen and try to start conversations, create awareness like you talked about, in ways that are compelling, in ways that you repeat, in ways that at least get people thinking or considering it. Because I even thought, like, during that song, it's like, even that song, though, holds back where it's like, I'll go anywhere, but we want people to go somewhere, you know? And that may not be a country, I know not every person is called to go. That's not what I'm saying, to go long-term as a missionary. But every person has a part they play in the Great Commission. Yeah. That is the mission of the church. And so when we share that, it's still like, that's our yes. We're saying, I'll go anywhere. Well, now it takes the part of saying, well, what is Jesus asking you to do?
Yeah.
Like, we're audacious enough to believe he's going to ask you to do things.
Yeah.
Specifically, can you do them? Will you do them?
Yeah. Julie and I are part of a piece of the River Valley culture building thing is we have these core discipleship trainings. One of them's Alpha, you know, what is it to be a follower of Jesus? The next one is Freedom, which is, what are all these things in your life that might be holding you back from the full walking with Jesus? Let's get those, you know, put aside in your life. But then the third one is Explore, which is God has a heart for the world and you have a part to play in that. And we're seeing it as a core curriculum of the church of being a disciple is to know God's heart and your part of the core. All right, so Jesse was a little reticent to share exactly how we do or how River Valley does this with all the different ages. So we needed to bring up a little help for him. Okay. So
I'm basically an also ran. I understand.
So we're going to bring up our last guest this afternoon. So come on up, Emma. Emma's 11 years old. All right. And let me tell you about Emma. Her most important job is she's the older sister. It's very important. And she is the oldest daughter, and she's 11 years old, and she's in sixth grade, and she's part of Go Kids at River Valley Church. And so, Emma, tell me, how does Go Kids help you learn about missionaries and what God's doing in the world?
Well, whenever a missionary comes into big church, they'll always come into kids, and we have an opportunity to ask them questions about, like, their lifestyle as missionaries, what they do on the field, what kind of foods they eat, all that kind of stuff. And then also, before they leave, we get to get one of their prayer cards. And we get to, every time we look at it, we get to see, we get to pray for them.
Pray for them. Cool. So do kids ask good questions?
Most of the time they're like, do you have McDonald's there?
Okay. Things like that. How else? So they'll come in your Go Kids during Sunday morning. How else has church given you ways to get connected, get involved? What other ways?
The kids pastors are always saying, well, you can make a lemonade stand to raise money, or you can like mow people's lawns or babysit. Me and my friend, we made a baking business and we just sell some baked goods.
So you made baked goods to earn some money for missionaries?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Cool. That's awesome. All right. Has your family, have you gotten to go on a global team with your family yet?
Yeah, last summer I went to Global Team Iowa and we helped pull weeds and sweep some rooms and.
Okay. In Iowa, at a camp, right?
Yeah, it was like a kids camp thing.
Special kids camp for special kids. Oh, that's cool. So the whole family went for that?
Yeah.
All right. So what do you like best? I mean, for you personally, when missionaries come in, what do you like the best about that?
I like when we all put our hands on them and we do a really big collective prayer and the kids get to volunteer to pray.
Uh-huh. That is really cool. So cool. You guys have any questions for Emma?
I really like how it's so cool that they get to do what God intended for us to do, and they get to go all around the world and see lots of different things, and in places that people need help, they get to serve there and stuff.
That's an awesome answer.
So you think you might want to be a missionary someday?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Do you think your parents will let you?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's good.
We better.
All right. Well, very cool. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Dan, Kaylin, Jesse, and Emma. It's been really awesome to hear you, and you can grab them during our break time now and ask them some more questions. We're out of time. But thanks so much for joining us. Stand up again one more time. Give them a big hand.
Good job, man.
All right. Thanks a bunch. Oh, yes, we got to do our selfie. All right. All right. Thanks a bunch. Come on up.